We're going to bring Benjamin back in here with us. We've got a couple of little blurbs in our system out there. I think that's all clear up. Did you clear that up? Little blurbs in our system there. Not exactly sure what that was, but we got that cleared up. Benjamin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So, all right, let's talk about this a little bit, because there's enormous possibilities here with a device that actually can null out gravity. I mean, you mentioned the high speed train, the magnetic train, earlier in the program. We know that because of the
right.
So, go ahead.
When you're looking at travel within an atmosphere, you're actually looking at aerodynamics.
Right.
Here we're talking about the whole design of the craft. Here we are. I'm only focused on the propulsion technology.
So,
yeah, if you ask me where we're going to get the energy from, I will say I don't know. That's
yeah.
not my problem.
You come up with the energy. Well, I just all right.
Getting around that. So, what I believe is that we will be close to the theoretical limit of the energy requirements. It
right.
won't be like internal combustion, which are,
right.
I believe internal combustion engines are around 30% efficient.
Right. Well, what about nuclear? I mean, I know that we use these small nuclear pellets that we put into our spacecraft, probes and so forth, to power them as they go through space, because solar panels are just no good, because the further away you get from the sun, the less power you're gathering. So they have to go with these new... The power needed to power these devices, yes?
Yes.
That seems to
but
be...
But if there's a need, somebody will invent it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. If there is a need, someone will invent it. And I know that, you know, we've... And again, talking about dark energy, and, you know, this is, like I mentioned at the start of the program, there's a physicist out there that has... You know, if we can harness the power of dark energy, can build a warp drive ship to travel from one planet to the next, extremely high speed. This is something that a lot of scientists, a lot of physicists are looking at, trying to figure out exactly what it is and how to harness it. Do you think that we may be able to do it in a few years?
Using dark energy, I really don't know.
Yes.
We really don't have an understanding of what it really is.
Yes.
We don't have an understanding, if we don't have both a theoretical understanding for starters, for something like this, leading to a technological understanding, it's not going to happen.
Right.
It's not going to happen in the near future. Let me correct myself. It's not going to happen in the near future. If you look at some of the inventions that we have had, the lasers, for example,
mm-hmm.
they took 30, 40 years in the development before today, before they became a reality. And today we have laser pointers for your talks to point on your visuals on a projection screen.
Yes.
But that took 30, 40 years to develop.
Right.
And that is a comparatively simple technology compared to what we would need for dark energy.
Yes.
I don't want to pour cold water, but that is my belief.
Right.
Unless somebody has a much clearer understanding of dark energy theoretically,
yes.
and also the end is very important. The technological understanding of how to deal with dark matter. Without those two, it's going to be a long time in the coming.
Right. What about superconductors? I mean, I know that there's a lot of research into superconductors cooling metal at a very, or you know.
And he showed that he could change the weight of an object above it by 2% or 3%, and it was completely sealed. The spinning disk, superconducting disk, was completely sealed, so there was no it was guaranteed that there was no physical interaction between the two. So it had to be gravitational shielding.
Yes.
And some of the, I examined some of his experiments, and it does look like it is gravitational shielding. But there's one slight problem. Nobody in the West has been able to reproduce his work.
Really?
And at least nobody has publicly come forward and said, yes, I can reproduce his work.
Hmm.
Because the superconducting disk keeps cracking.
Oh.
That is why they've not been able to reproduce his work. Nobody here has been able to figure out how to create a superconducting disk according to his vague specifications. His specifications are quite vague. And rotate it at 5,000 RPM.
Yes, because it just keeps breaking on them.
The problem is the cracking. There was also another piece to it that has gone little noticed. It's actually a dual-layer disk. The top layer is superconducting, the bottom layer is not.
Oh, interesting. So, yes. they just overlooked that?
No. That I used my modeling to work backwards to what he was doing. I didn't use quantum theory. I just used normal process modeling.
Yes.
And I found out that the critical element was the dual layer.
Mm-hmm.
The top layer was superconducting, so you have a magnetic field that surrounds the superconducting surface mm-hmm. on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom layer, what happens is that the electric field, there's also electric field surrounding the disk. What happens is that on the top surface, the electric field and the magnetic field are interacting with each other. On the bottom surface, because the lower surface is not superconducting, the magnetic field and the electric field does not interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that difference is what causes the shielding effect.
Ah, I see. So
and another thing I found out, and this is something some people need to, scientists need to verify. What I found out was that the structure of the magnetic field, also from reverse engineering, produced by a superconducting disk, is the right type to give you shielding, reduce the gravitational field effect.
Yes.
If you had a different, if you had produced the magnetic field from a non-superconducting disk, my calculation suggested that it would be it would have an increased effect. That means the weight of the object would have increased.
Interesting. So it's really interesting how you can it'll change, and the fact that it increases the weight of the object is probably to me more fascinating than the decreasing it, because what we're getting here, I mean there's many avenues that can be taken in the commercial world with technology like this.
Yes, but be careful. These are only calculations working backwards.
Right.
Reverse engineering. They are not yet experimental confirmations.
Yes.
If it is experimentally confirmed by some third party out here in the West, then we are sure we are on the right track.
Yes. Interesting. So where is your research at currently, right now? Because you just basically got done with all of this, yes?
I have my own private company.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lot of it is desktop. I call up a university and they'll say, look guys, I need to run an experiment. Can I run this experiment in your lab?
Uh-huh.
Usually they will say yes. Sometimes, like for example, I wanted to duplicate Lathwaite's 50-pound wheel experiment, and I called up the universities here, and they said, no way. You want to? You want to do what? You want to spin a 50-pound disc to 5,000 RPM? No way. Our insurance doesn't cover that. So I hired a contractor, machine shop contractor, in the next city, in the next town.
Yes.
And we reproduced some of his experiments, but we dare not carry the wheel. We put it on a stand and put the weight scale on it, and yes, we did see the weight changes.
Yes.
How did the
contracted company respond whenever you explained to them what you wanted to do and why? Did they kind of like eyes glaze over and like, what? You want to what?
No. The machine shop guys told me, yeah, as long as you pay, we'll do whatever you want.
Sure.
But the university labs say, no way, no such thing. You're not going to do that anywhere near us because our insurance doesn't cover it.
You know, did you ever, have you looked at any of, gone back to any of Tesla's work and used any of his work in your research at all?
No, I have not.
No?
I've read some of his work, but I have not gone back because it's, if you want to start piecing together details, the information has to be very, very specific.
Yes.
It's not specific enough. Even in Porklanov's papers, he published two papers. I think the third one he withdrew.
Yes.
Oh, he published three papers. I'm not sure. I can't remember now which of the three. But there were three papers.
Mm-hmm.
When you start picking away at what he had written, you'll find that there were so many things missing.
Right.
And you actually had to guess at what his field strengths were.
Sure.
And so what I did was I built a model and I worked backwards. If you observe 2%, this was what your electric field strength was, what your magnetic field strength was, and this is what your spin was, and that sort of thing.
Right.
And because I worked backwards, I was pretty sure that what I had done matched up with what he had seen.
Yes.
There's a fairly substantial degree of confidence that things were correct.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want to be sure, somebody has to do it independently of what he has done.
Right, right.
And the problem is the cracking of the disk.
Yes.
Hasn't been solved.
Yes.
And not publicly, not from the data that's been published and made available to the public, that problem has not been solved.
Right. You know, we talk about UFOs, UFO sightings, these very legitimate ones, everything from the Japan Airlines pilot that saw this massive disc come along the plane. The air traffic controllers could see it on radar with no beacon. The pilot was reporting what he was seeing, and we have audio of this. So we talk about UFOs a lot on this program.
Right.
The technology behind it, going back and forth between the government, government black ops projects and things like this, the UFO aspect, the propulsion in these things are incredibly fascinating. Lots of people have speculated and theorized about the technology being used in these things from what people have witnessed. Your thoughts on when you hear this? I mean, is it along the same things you're researching? I mean, do you think that this is what is being used and how it's being used, or what's your opinion?
That's one subject I've avoided like the plague.
Really?
But for your program, what I did was I went over to the History Channel and watched the UFO Hunters show.
Yes.
Some of the evidence looks good.
Yes.
The engineering, there are two portions, the physics and the engineering. People forget that are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, the stuff that's coming out of Lockheed Martin is you know, I don't know. It's interesting, especially around here where we're at. I mean, we have so many sightings of the same craft that is miles wide with no sound can travel. We have radar returns. These things are moving from 25 miles an hour to 2,000 miles an hour. That just boggles the mind.
That you need a force field type of technology to do that sort of thing. And something, an acceleration that does not require mass.
Yes.
And relativity has not reached that point.
Right.
The established sciences have not reached that point where they can produce a field effect of acceleration, field of acceleration without using mass.
Right.
Once you reach that point, then anything is possible.
Yes. So it's pretty safe to say that some of these things being seen, well, may not be military at all. May just be, well, we won't even speculate on what they will be, but definitely not within our realm of science.
Let me give an example.
Okay.
People say that some of this stuff is re-engineered up to a point that is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a famous Wall Street guy. Let's say Henry Kravitz from KKR.
Okay.
He has a ton of personal wealth. Let's take all his personal wealth. Let's give him a challenge. You use all your personal wealth, employ all the physicists in the world, physicists only, theoretical physicists. Give them a cell phone. Let them try and reverse engineer cell phone technology.
Yes.
It will take them quite a few years to do it.
Really?
Because their field of knowledge is completely different from the field of knowledge, from the field of engineering that you need for cell phones. So the tools that they are using will not enable them to reverse engineer a cell phone.
Right.
Very simple. It's very simple. Today we look at it. Your cell phone is better than my cell phone. No, my cell phone is greater than yours. My cell phone can transfer more data. We take all this for granted. But if you take a group of theoretical physicists whose expertise is in relativity and quantum theory,
mm-hmm.
they will not be able to reverse engineer the semicon technology that has gone into the cell phone.
Yes. And even if you were to take an engineer and throw him into the mix, if he does not understand the silicon technology in it, he's not going to be able to reverse engineer it either, is he?
Yes.
Mm.
And that is why reverse engineering is not as simple or easy as people believe it to be.
Yes. Yeah, very excellent, excellent point. It puts a
whole. Even if you have the brightest minds. If you don't have the right theoretical tools and the technological tools, it's going to be very difficult to reverse engineer something as obvious and common as a cell phone.
Right. So the premise of we've reverse engineered alien technology is not as simple as it sounds.
No.
At all.
That the premise of reverse engineering alien technology actually does a little bit of damage. It discredits the genuine work of genuine scientists and engineers who helped create the technology.
Right. That's true.
And lasers is a very good example. Lasers started with work Einstein had done.
Yes.
That was almost 100 years ago. If humans had reverse engineered an alien technology, the only thing we would have had lasers 80 years ago?
Yeah, true. We just caught up. That's very true. Well, I'll tell you what. If we flash forward, let's say we flash forward 10 years from now, and we go to your website, and you're on video, and you're demonstrating an active model of a device that you've put together that completely nulls out gravity, gravity modification at 99.9%, I guarantee you people will say that you've reverse engineered alien technology.
That's why. That's why my web on my website I posted all my research.
Yes.
All my publicly available research, published research, and you can see the mistakes I've made, the wrong, all the dead ends I went through, and all the right things I did, and you can see it has evolved over 10 years into something that's quite substantial.
Yes, indeed.
And I leave it up there. I don't try to say that I was right every time. You can see all my mistakes.
Right.
Some of them came back. I would laugh and say, "Oh my God, did I say that 10 years ago?" Yeah, because one of the earliest ideas I put forward was that the particle shape changes, but I say it elongates in the direction of the Earth's gravitational field.
Yes.
Okay. When you put all the physics correctly in place, the elongation is actually away from the gravitational field.
That's so fascinating. That's really, really interesting.
It took 10 years.
Yes, 10 years of work. And you have the videos up of you doing the experiments, right, on your website?
Yes.
And that's www.isetei.us, correct?
Correct. And ISETI stands for Interstellar Space Exploration Technology Initiative.
Yes, and we definitely need that now more than ever with our space program just seemingly dying, and we're just kind of hanging out in our orbit, not really going anywhere unless we're sending probes. It's just, we need to do something. Definitely need to do something.
Right.
So.
One of my presentations, I said, if you don't set your goals hard enough, you're not even going to approach 10% of what you want to reach.
That's true. You know, there really hasn't been any really solid, I mean, not groundbreaking like we've had in the past whenever it comes to inventions, in my opinion. You know, we've had some great corporate technology that has come out and, you know, that has been mass marketed, but nothing like what we had in the past where someone like what you're doing right now. 10 years it's taken you to get to this point, and you are very confident that in the near future we will have a device that will give us pure gravity modification, which will expand the space industry, will change the world in a sense.
Yes.
Very fascinating. Let me stop you right there. I'm gonna hang on to you here for just a little while longer after the top of the hour, and we'll get to your website and your books. We're gonna take our quick break here, so everybody stay right where you are. It's Badlands Radio. I kind of missed my top of the hour break just a little bit. We'll be back right after this. Stick around. We're not done yet.
We'll be getting back to Jack after these messages. Stay tuned for more Badlands Radio. You're listening to 99.9 FM KVMP in Central Texas.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is trying to sound more conciliatory in the wake of his country's disputed elections, saying every single Iranian is valuable. The statement came as hundreds of thousands of protesters filled the streets of Tehran again today. The U.S. Navy is keeping a close eye on a North Korean ship that's hugging the coastline of China. U.S. officials say the vessel is under suspicion of possibly violating new U.N. sanctions barring Pyongyang from exporting weapons. Meantime, a Japanese paper says Japan's defense ministry believes North Korea intends to fire a missile toward Hawaii early next month. The crew of a Continental Airlines flight from Brussels to New Jersey was calm, cool, and collected today after the jet's pilot died over the Atlantic. After co-pilots safely guided the flight to a landing shortly before noon, passengers said they had no idea the pilot had died. Continental says the 61-year-old pilot died of natural causes. This is IRN USA Radio News.
Men and women, if you've got 10 to 30 pounds or more to lose, please listen carefully. Guys, many of us tend to overeat. We eat too much red meat, fast foods, and processed foods. This keeps the belly flabby and keeps our bodies overweight. Ladies, have you ever said, I feel fat today? Or do you have this bloated feeling? And how many of you have been trying to lose the same 10 to 20 pounds for years? There's a healthy and faster way to lose weight than any diet pill. It's called EverCleanse, a clinically proven weight loss and detox formula that helps you lose weight and get rid of the 5 to 25 pounds of waste that some experts say is trapped to the colon walls like spackle or paste. 2 weeks of EverCleanse may be equal to months of dieting. It's simple, too. Natural, tasteless crystals that dissolve in any food or beverage. EverCleanse will flatten out your midsection, reduce love handles, and bellies and bloating have been disappearing in just days. You see, EverCleanse gets rid of the weight you can't take off by exercising or starving yourself on a diet. And it's not something you have to take for the rest of your life. Call now to receive a very special offer.
Call 800-567-5598. Ask about a free supply. 800-567-5598. That's 800-567-5598.
President Obama's plan to increase oversight of banks and other financial institutions is being met with skepticism on Capitol Hill. Senators are sharply questioning whether it's enough to prevent another meltdown. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner calls the proposal the nation's best shot. Terror groups are making more use of the internet to fund their operations and recruit engineers. National security correspondent Sagar Magani reports from the Pentagon.
They've long gone online to spread propaganda, but one senior defense official says terrorists are tapping the web even more now, looking for computer experts who could carry out cyber attacks. Defense and counterterror officials say the biggest fear is extremists could use one of those attacks in tandem with physical assaults like bombings. At the same time, law enforcement officials say terrorists are branching out into internet fraud to raise more money for jihadist operations. Sagar Magani at the Pentagon.
For the latest news and analysis, log on to IRNUSANews.com.
Here's a word about Israel from Dr. Woodrow Kroll, president of Back to the Bible International.
I want to encourage you to make the journey of a lifetime, one that will transform your heart and spirit forever. Because when you visit Israel, you will never be the same.
To start planning your trip to Israel today, visit www.goisrael.com.
You'll never be the same.
A $106 billion emergency spending bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan has won final approval in the U.S. Senate. The vote to pay for the wars through September was 91-5. After earlier passage by the House, the legislation now goes to President Obama for his signature. The measure contains several provisions unrelated to war funding, including the so-called Cash for Clunkers law. The Venezuelan government has undertaken steps to reform.
Quote, make use of it. The agency in charge of patents in Venezuela, the Autonomous Service for Intellectual Property, has been accused of abandoning its duties and violating the Venezuelan constitution by becoming a promoter of illegal copies of inventions that already have patents. Mark Thomas, IRN USA Radio News.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has suspended Cleveland Browns wide receiver Dante Stallworth indefinitely without pay. Stallworth pled guilty to a DUI manslaughter charge this week in Miami. He was sentenced to a 30-day prison sentence, 2 years of house arrest, and 10 years probation. In a letter to Stallworth, Goodell called his conduct inexcusable and said it was his job as commissioner to decide an appropriate punishment in the NFL. With IRN USA Radio News, I'm Hope Duggar.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line.
Listening to Badlands Radio, and now once again your host, Captain Jack.
Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs.
So let's think about this for a minute. Let's think if we had the technology right now of anti-gravity. I mean, anti-gravity is... the things that we could do is incredible. I mean, we're all talking about, dependence on oil or, green environment, green products. It's the products that do not harm the environment. The energy is going to be a huge hurdle to get over, because whenever it comes right down to it, that is our biggest challenge. But I do believe that, like what Benjamin said, if there's a reason to create it, someone will create it. Someone will find the solution. It's an excellent point. Excellent point. Now, he does have videos up on his website where you can go take a look at this. And again, it's www.iseti.us. And we mentioned just before the break here that, our space program, I mean, what are we doing? What do we do? We're finally going back to the moon. We were there a few times, and then we just never went back. Right? We have Mars sitting out there. I mean, what are we doing in space exploration? Not a whole hell of a lot. Wouldn't you agree, Benjamin? So we're not really doing anything whenever it comes to space exploration at all. We're not going anywhere. We're not doing anything. So what's going to happen in our space exploration if we don't have something groundbreaking, or we don't start thinking outside the box? Oh, did we lose him? We lost him completely? No? Benjamin, are you still with us?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, there you are. Did we get you back here? We kind of lost you for a moment there, didn't we? Or did we lose him completely? Benjamin?
Yes.
You back with us?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a lot of noise on my side. I can hear a lot of noise on my side, but I wasn't sure whether it was still the break or...
How about now?
We're back now, right?
Yes, we are back.
Okay.
My question was, is if we don't have something groundbreaking for our space exploration... It's going to die, because we're really not doing anything with space exploration. All we're doing is, it's being privatized now. Maybe some of the private companies can take something like your research and, throw even more money into it and get it moving faster paced, maybe. I'm not sure. What's your opinion on a space program?
The space program is vital. But it's too expensive.
Yes.
The way it's going right now. I think what Bert Rutan and Scale Composites did was a phenomenal breakthrough, with Virgin taking their technology and building it into a business. Because you basically gone from $20 million a start per person to about $200,000 per person.
Yes.
But those are low Earth orbit flights.
Right.
What I want to do is I want to make this $250 a person.
$250 a person?
Person. Because if you count, that's my goal.
Yes.
Because what I did was I went and looked at the biggest airlines in the U.S., which was United Airlines. Calculate the average ticket price, it was about $220.
Uh-huh.
That was several years ago. So
yes.
Given inflation would be about $250 right now.
Yeah.
So if we want to make commercial space exploration a reality where millions of people can go,
mm-hmm.
it has to be on the order of $250 per person.
Hmm. That'd be wild.
Yes. That's the whole point.
Yes.
Anyone and everyone, space is just another destination.
Right.
That will take a revolutionary technology.
Yes.
And
energy, physics, and engineering is going to be the three keys.
Yes. And I'm hoping it will be mine. yes. my technology to detect it.
Yeah, me too.
So far, to be objective, so far, that's the only one on the horizon.
Yes.
That can do that kind of flight cost.
Yes. It's definitely, definitely exciting stuff. Now, I want to direct people towards your website. Again, okay. It's www.iseti.us. All of your research is up there. The successes, yeah. the failures, the videos, it's all there for anyone to take a look at. And that's a great way to keep following you, to find out how the progress of this project goes, yes?
Yes, but I usually, on average, I update the website maybe 3 times a year.
Yes.
So don't expect too many changes. Because when I'm ready to publish something and present it, then it goes up on the website.
Sure, sure.
But I notice it's because it's a very highly specialized field. I get about, let's say, 3 or 4 hits a day
mm-hmm.
from 120 countries around the world.
Jeez.
So that shows you the interest that is in this kind of technology, unspoken interest.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Without a doubt. I without a doubt, I can see why. Well, Benjamin, it's been fantastic having you on the program. I really appreciate you coming on and talk to us about this. There is several different avenues that people have to take a look at your work as well. We have them all listed in your bio on our website, and you have a book basically that basically gets down to the fundamentals of this, correct?
Yes, I have explained most of the stuff that I've researched. I put into a book called An Introduction to Gravity Modification. But the book is always being updated.
Oh.
So there will be a newer version, let's say, end of the year, 12 months from now.
Oh, I see. So you have the last one was the 2008 series. You got the 2009 going to be coming out very soon, though.
No, because we're always updating, we're always revising, we're always thinking things through.
Yes.
So there will always be updates to the book.
Very nice. Very cool. And they can get the book from your website if they want to dive a little bit deeper into this. Maybe you might...
Yes, there's a link to the publisher.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for being on the program. And go ahead.
I just wanted to mention 2 more things.
Sure.
One is I'll be giving a webcast via worldnpa.org.
Uh-huh.
And if people want to listen to actually see and listen to my presentation of my specific 2009 paper, they can go there.
Okay, and that's going to be in July or August, but not the exact date. That's
July.
To be July? Okay.
No, it's July 18th.
July 18th. All right, we're going to get that updated in your bio here and get that up on the site. And it's worldnpa.org, correct?
Yes.
Very, very cool.
And the other one is ISSPES.org, which is the SPESIF conference. We're having that conference in... February, next conference in February, and at John Hopkins, and people are willing, are welcome to attend that conference and listen to the latest thinking on these types of topics.
I'm gonna have to put all this towards my friend Ian. Ian O'Neill, his way on his radar, because I'm sure that he would be absolutely fascinated with this stuff, and maybe write a story on it too. I think it's worth writing about. Well, again, thank you so much for being on the program. I hope to talk to you soon, and I'll keep my eyes on your website and the updates.
Yeah.
3 times a year is not bad. I mean, let us know if there's anything that you want us to put out there, and we're happy to do it for you.
Okay. And thank you for having me on your show.
You bet. You bet. Have a great night. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes.
Bye-bye. Bye. You know, the concept of anti-gravity. It's been explored many times in the past, many, many times in the past. And there's been a lot of exciting, there's been a lot of excitement in some things that turned out not to be so good in the end. But with what he explained, where he's done it several different times in several different ways, I think he may be onto something. We don't know. We'll have to just keep our eyes open on it. But again, the energy is definitely going to be a challenge, that's for sure. All right, we're going to do a little something here. We're going to be switching camera systems over here momentarily. I believe there's going to be something they're going to try and pull here during the live program. And I've got in my mix here, we're going to kind of explore these very interesting chemtrails that is causing Morgellons disease. We've talked about this in the past. And, a lot of people are, it's a big controversy over whether or not these aircraft are actually spraying us. But we have found out that in the UK that they have done spraying in the past to see how different chemical and biological effects it would have on the public. And we're going to be playing that for you here at the bottom of the hour. We are going to take a really, really fast break here so we can get this camera system switched over. Now, we're expecting a lot of military activity tonight. Just from what we saw, and it's always a toss-up. It's always a coin toss whenever it comes to this. Sometimes there's lots of activity, sometimes not so much. So we're going to take our quick short break here for just a moment. And when we come back, we'll explore this spraying and some new reports around Texas. So stick around. It's Badlands Radio. It's Thursday night, and we'll be right back.
I can feel kissed the first time.
Talk show to find that it's been preempted for this?
In the air to deep right center. Back goes Lewis to the wall. And it's all here!
Or this?
And I'm ashamed of you, Hillary, for voting for it.
Do you have a favorite talk radio program that's not available in your city? Just go to TalkStreamLive.com for links to the best streaming talk radio shows. At TalkStream Live, you will find live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All your favorites are here. With such a large selection, you will also discover some new favorites. On the go and still want to listen? With a Windows mobile smartphone, simply type TalkStreamLive.mobi on your internet browser. Now you can take internet radio with you. You will also find hundreds of music, news, and sports streams. Best of all, the TalkStream Live directory is free and there's never a login required. Remember TalkStreamLive.com, the fastest route between you and your favorite talk radio show.
You're listening to Badlands Radio. And now once again, your host, Captain Jack.
We're back here. We had to shift gears just a little bit and make a couple of changes here in the studio. We're going to switch over one of the cameras to kind of give you a split view on screen. It didn't work the way that we wanted it to, unfortunately. And the reason why we're doing this is because earlier today we did a little experiment. Now, one thing that we've noticed in the area is some what we believe to be contrails. Even Angela Joyner had mentioned that in Stephenville, they started seeing these contrails in the area not too long after their sighting. So do these things go hand in hand? I want to play an audio for you. Just a little quick audio, actually a couple of them. And this is how I really wanted to end the program tonight, because this is something that I've received some email on in the past couple of days with questions about this. And it kind of goes back and forth. So I'm going to play this. And for those of you out there that emailed me on this, you guys can kind of come to your conclusion. Maybe this answers it a little bit. I don't know. The questions you had, maybe this answers it just a little bit. Let's see here. Let me make sure I got this set. Yes, I do. Here's the first audio. Just listen to these. It's a person that shot this.
These people are so conditioned that they think this is completely natural. I mean, you know, if this up here wasn't chemical-based, it would have completely dissipated by now. Look at this. That plane has made repeated passes over our small little rural town in Oregon, repeated passes around, made a circular pattern over the town center, and he's going off to the west, actually to the north, to the southwest, completely away from the airport, not even attempting to land at the airport. So what is the point of this? The point of this, the plane is over there. The point of this is soft kill tactics. Chemicals in these clouds are soft kill weapons. It has sodium bromide as the number one chemical found in them, which is used as a pesticide.
A tiny ass little town, and nothing ever happens here, so what the hell is the point? Like, I don't understand why they're doing that here, Because it's not like we're a threat to anybody. This is 8,000 people in this town, for God's sake. Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, the point.
All right, so I wanted to play that a little bit. So people are noticing these things. And as you're watching the video, we'll get it up on the website here. You can definitely tell that this thing made circles around the town. And this stuff does linger in the air. So the big question is the government doing this? And a lot of people say, absolutely, without a doubt, they're doing this. This is something that was uncovered not too long ago. Listen to this, all right? This may put it in perspective for you, just a tad. Here we go. Stand by. Let's see if we get this queued up for you. Listen very closely.
Secret biological warfare trials were carried out in the skies and on the streets of East Anglia without the public knowing. So alarming are our discoveries that tonight's program is an Inside Out special. Were 3 deaths from cancer in this woman's family the result of spraying cadmium from military aircraft?
I really put it down to the cadmium being dropped and it was settled into the soil.
It was top secret. It mustn't be told to the people what was happening. I think it does matter, you know, in terms of the health of people, that they know that this is being inflicted on them.
We came to the conclusion that no one is likely to have suffered any harm from the amounts of zinc cadmium sulfide they might have encountered, even in a worst-case scenario.
In the 1950s, as the Cold War escalated, there were fears that Britain, as an exposed, vulnerable island, could be devastated by a biological or chemical warfare attack. In readiness for possible war, people living in vast areas of Bedfordshire, Norfolk, and the East Coast became guinea pigs in covert defense experiments. Inside Out disentangles the facts from the deceit to reveal a disturbing chapter of secret history that may prove to be at odds with the official line. A chemical concoction comprising cadmium was used to mimic how a biological germ cloud would spread if Soviet Russia released one during an attack on us. Rural Bedfordshire was sprayed from aircraft and, more shockingly, from a converted lorry. The city of Norwich was hit over a sustained period. The Ministry of Defence have consistently said there was no significant health risk as a result of the experiments.
I used to work in the cancer field and always knew that cadmium, you know, was a deposit in your body that you oughtn't to have. Why they chose cadmium, why they did the whole test, you know, is a mystery to me.
In 1963, Norfolk was first sprayed with this chemical. At the time, Yvonne Jarman lived on Halvergate Marshes near Great Yarmouth. There was no history of cancer in her family before then.
First of all, my mother had esophageal cancer and she died with it. And then my sister, she had esophageal cancer and she died with it October 2005. And then my brother, he died with it, and this was earlier this year. And now I've got it.
Do you believe then that Halvergate could have a higher concentration of this cadmium because of its position and where the wind would have blown the zinc cadmium sulfide at the time of the tests?
Well, I don't know if it could have been any more there, any more than it is in other places, but I'm pretty sure that Halvergate had its fair share.
Inside Out has delved deeper into this story. Not only have we discovered that scant regard was paid to the safety of these experiments, but that there were highly questionable ethics involved. So how did it all come about? In the 1950s, the Russians were taking an aggressive stance. Yet if war came again, it would be played under different rules. Chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons were waiting in the wings. Here in Britain, the Defence Research Establishment at Portham Down in Wiltshire was doing its best to find ways to protect us.
Portham Down wanted to find out if the Soviets launched a biological cloud off the coast of Britain and it rolled across Britain. They wanted to see what effect it would actually have in killing people and, you know, inflicting damage on Britain.
So what they had to do is look around for something that they called a simulant. Now, a simulant is a supposedly harmless substance that mimics all the properties of a real biological warfare agent. And they settled on a substance called zinc cadmium sulfide. What would happen quite often is a plane would fly off the coast, started at Cromer, flew down past Lowestoft, down the east coast, and then along the English Channel, always spraying zinc cadmium sulfide all the time, quite large quantities of it, at least a pound a mile. Some of these particles will get stuck in the sampling units. The sampling units are then taken away, they're studied, mainly by having a fluorescent light played onto them, and the individual particles of the simulant are then counted by a scientist.
Frontline RAF bases like Cardington outside Bedford were redeployed for defence against an enemy which was yet to show its hand. Today the military presence has gone, but hidden ghosts still linger. Most prominent among the remains now are the two vast hangars which housed airships like the famous R101. But also stationed here was the Balloon Defence Establishment, and connected with that is a far darker history. Although the future for airships was uncertain, the technology still had a use in weather monitoring. The Balloon Defence Establishment emerged from the Second World War, fired up with all sorts of secret military work that could be disguised as meteorology. So clandestine were its operations that even employees were kept in the dark about what was going on.
We worked in this hangar on the balloons, repairing, inflating, rigging them. The people that did the weather balloon, which was just around the corner here, they attached various instruments to it, but I mean, I don't know what they were.
Another former Balloon Defence Serviceman, Bob Musket, has lived in Cardington for most of his life. While he worked on the base, gossip was commonplace.
During the time I was there, the rumours were rife about this. They were experimenting with different things. The major one was gas, the use of gas in wartime.
What you don't know, you don't worry about. So if they're doing something that they haven't told you about, then the fewer people that know about it, then it's a better kept secret, isn't it?
At the time, Portland Down was a completely secret establishment. It was barely known about. So it was just a sort of reflex action at the time that everything they did was kept in complete secrecy. And their argument was that you couldn't tell the public what was going on, because if you told the public what was going on, then the Russians would find out.
These open-air biological trials might never have come to light if it wasn't for people like Mike Kenner. Styled as an open government campaigner, Kenner has made full use of the Freedom of Information Act to obtain access to locked away government files. He's unearthed some startling facts about what went on in East Anglia. But there's one secret that has turned Kenner's investigation on its head.
Recent document has come to light from Portland Down which shows that they didn't check this substance for toxicity prior to the spraying, or indeed even afterwards. The former Portland scientist who investigated this in 1999 was quite surprised that no one had bothered to research on how this would affect the public.
This is a copy of the official report. It acknowledges that cadmium is a poisonous heavy metal, but it was not tested for its toxicity prior to the experiments. Alarmingly, this was admitted to be a deficit.
Normally, a substance used by Portland Down, especially in a public area, would be subjected to a toxicity test. This toxicity test would mean that the substance was given a unique T number. Zinc cadmium sulfide has no T number. No one appears to have looked into the ramifications of breathing this substance in, especially in the size that they sprayed it in, between 1 and 5 microns, which obviously means that it gets deep into your lungs.
Coming up, the lanes of Bedfordshire turned into an outside laboratory.
The amount of cadmium we're exposed to anyway, by which is released by industry into the atmosphere, is very much greater than anyone was exposed to from this.
We know something that potentially
was harmful was introduced into the atmosphere here. In and around Cardington, at least 55 field tests.
Let me just stop it right there. So obviously, the British government at one time were doing these experiments with this very, very dangerous stuff that they were spraying on the public without the public ever knowing about it. They were trying to test the effects of how it would affect the population. Now, this was done in the 50s. So my question is now, if you go on YouTube, you'll find several of these videos that have been put up of the exact same thing that they're seeing in the skies. They're seeing these chemical trails being left in the skies over towns. And now, like in the first video that I played, where they said it's all about population control, you know, bringing down the population, sterilizing, putting estrogen in her, you know, why are they doing this? Now, so population control, I don't think that it's population control at all. I really don't think it's population control on that level, because, you know, they keep saying that the earth is overcrowded, that we're going to have overpopulation on the earth. Well, that's not necessarily true either. I think this is a false perception that has been played on us just because of the living conditions in the areas and geographical areas are definitely overcrowded. It is an absolute mystery of what the hell and why. What is the ultimate goal? Why are they doing this? That is the big question. That is something that we may never know the answer to. We know what it's causing. We know the effects that it's causing. That's relatively clear. But why? Well, I don't know. Maybe there's something more to it. Maybe what we see now happening over our towns, like in the audio that I played for these problems within the population. Let's look at healthcare for a moment. I mean, if all of us are sick and we're constantly having to go for medication and to doctors and, you know, I don't know. It just gets so damn complicated. I do want to play this audio for you before we run out of time. My producer's pulling it up for me. About population control, about the population of the world, of exactly how populated we are, over or underpopulated. Let's look at it that way, I guess. So we'll explore that here in a moment once the video gets passed on over to me. So going hand in hand with UFO sightings, and then you see the spraying being done, there's lots of speculation about why they go hand in hand. Same thing with, you know, this military vehicles that were driving around the day after our sighting out here. I don't know if they're military government vehicles, let me just put it that way. It's been a very strange broadcast night. Very strange. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, Jimmy's pointing something out to me. He put up on the he put up on the vidcast the lights that people were seeing last night that turned out to be a home. Now, again, the camera's kind of tilted just a little bit. So what you're seeing out there is a home or several homes or something. But as you can see, there's a tree right there. And with the wind, it makes it look like, it really does look like the Phoenix Lights, doesn't it? It really looks like the Phoenix Lights. So anyway, he wanted to point that out. He wanted to make sure that I mentioned that. So anyway, going back to why am I talking about this, the contrails. The amount of email that I got on this, because a lot of people were seeing the very strange clouds on our vidcast system and asking, hey, is that spraying? Are those contrails? Have you noticed any planes overhead? Well, we notice planes overhead all the time. None of them spraying that we've noticed, but once we looked at the photographs that people took from the vidcast and looked at them, yeah, they did look like chemical trails. They very well could be chemical trails. And just like in the first audio that I played, it's a small little area. There's nothing around here. Why would they do that? You know, why? What is the point? I don't know. But it is fascinating. So I hope this audio kind of explains a little bit that there has been in the past proof that governments have inflicted this on public, on the unsuspecting public. So there is no doubt in my mind that they're still doing it to this day. I don't think that it's under the same reason as they were doing it back in the 50s. I think they have a completely different reason altogether. There may be data that was gathered during those experiments in Britain that became very interesting to certain powers that be. I have no idea. But I do know that these really are chemical trails. So, anyway. So, I hope that cleared up a little bit of the questions that came through in the emails. And we have set up on the camera, we're going to start doing a record. A video record of any chemical trails that come over this area. Now, we have a pretty good view of the sky around here. I would like to get a better view. I wish we could get the camera up higher so we could really get a good 360-degree view. It would be really nice. But when there's always someone manning the camera, well, not 24/7, but a large percentage of the time, and we're going to set up a special email address that if you capture something or if you see something in the vidcast, if you just happen to be watching it at a particular time and you see something, you can take a screen capture or you can just shoot an email over to the camera admin. And he's able to pull up the camera view from anywhere. If he's at the grocery store and an email comes through, it says, object on camera or view on camera or anything like that. One touch of his... this setup. It really, really is. As you can see, we're really, really, really getting into the cameras around here, and I want to try and keep everyone, updated on all of that as much as possible. Now, a lot of people have expressed setting up their own cameras, their own web videos feeds, right? Not hard to do. I mentioned this last night or the night before. If you're interested in doing this, let us know. We'll kind of give you a kind of guide you through, point you in the right direction for setting this up. I guess I could do that now, actually doing it, right? One of the key things is to get yourself a very inexpensive computer, maybe a used computer, another one that you can just put in your house that you can dedicate towards the video stream. That's probably key. If you want to use your own computer, use your own computer. It's completely up to you. I would recommend using a completely separate computer, but that's just what I advise. The real good route to go is get yourself a very good quality video card, video input card. That's key. Preferably a DVR card. You can find some on eBay. There are some up on eBay that you can actually get from China that are relatively inexpensive. They're usually a four camera input. Sometimes they have relay outputs on them, so on and so forth, and they come with software. But be careful with these, because if you were to go that route, if you're getting an inexpensive one from China, sometimes they're a bit of a pain to get the software loaded and get it functioning on your computer properly. And if you're not really computer savvy, don't go that route. Maybe just get yourself a TV input card or something. Just do a search online for video input cards. That's the best way of doing it. Now, if you are savvy with computers and you really want to get something nice and you got the money to pay for it, go our route and go with something like, the top quality. Digital Watch Guard has some great, great DVR cards. They're expensive. They are. They're $300-$400 range. Some will go all the way up to $600-$700. But these things are fantastic because of the capabilities that you get with the software, with the video processing in them, or each individual chip. They're not one matrix chip inside of them. It's just a PCI card. It slaps right into the back of your computer. And usually has what's called a BNC video input, which is really simple. You can get the adapters for this thing at a local Radio Shack, a regular BNC adapter for coax cable or what have you. But that's if you want to go the more expensive. I'm going to try and keep this as easy as possible. So if you get yourself a simple video input card or one of these DVR cards from China, okay, if you want to, then it's all down to the camera. Now, of course, the quality of camera is going to be key, but you can pretty much go with anything. You could even probably go with a webcam if you wanted to. And get a webcam. They're not really that expensive. And if you're going to put it outside, just make sure you find some kind of build some sort of enclosure for it that you know, can keep it from getting soaked in the rain, much like our cameras get soaked in the rain. That's the best way of doing it. But once you have it all installed on your computer, as long as you have a way of getting a camera outside, let's just put it that way. How about that? Then it's just a simple matter of the software. Software, whatever software you want to use. And you know what? You don't even have to load up software onto your computer. Just get yourself a Ustream account. It's free. It's absolutely free. You log into it. You start broadcasting. You pick your audio source. You pick your video source. And you're good to go. And before you know it, you can take that embedded code and send it on over to us, and we'll create a special page, a Skywatch page, and we'll give locations and everything else. We'll put all this together. I think that it's a great idea that more and more people start. I mean, we have the technology to do it. Why not get more cameras pointed up in the sky? Why the hell not, right? You have the capabilities of recording, and if we have a central place to put all of the videos up live as they're happening, why the hell not? It's not that bad. Really not that bad at all. Now, to answer a lot of the questions where people said, hey, what kind of systems are you using, right? What are you using? Well, we are using high-end CCTV equipment for the cameras. The PTZ on top, well, I disconnected the zoom portion of it because I swapped out the camera from black and white to color. I modified this a little bit. But we are using high-end CCTV equipment for the cameras, and we're going to be adding some more here over the weekend, obviously, and we're going to be experimenting with a special page where you can get access to all four cameras. Now, this special page will only work with Internet Explorer, unfortunately. There's some things you have to do because it's ActiveX, and there's a login and everything else, and it's kind of a, you have to change some settings on your browser, but it's really not that difficult, and we'll have instructions up on how to do that. But this week, and probably Sunday night, you should have access on this experimental page to all four cameras that you can choose at any time. And the really cool thing about it is that you will be able to record from the video that you're seeing onto your computer. So you can choose a particular camera, a particular view, you can hit record, and it'll save it onto your computer as a video file. Pretty cool stuff. Now again, this is going to be experimental. We're going to see how well it works. We may leave it up there, we may not, because one of the key things to it is that particular video server, we're basically opening it up to the public. So the connections that are coming in to access that camera are coming directly into our systems, which again will mess with our bandwidth just a little bit. But if anything, we will have that access page available off of broadcast time. That way it doesn't interfere with the actual program. So we'll see how it works. I mean, I'm excited about this. We've been talking about doing this for a long time. And we've always started on the project, got a lot of stuff done, and then got busy with something else and put it on the shelf. Well, since the siding that we had here, we're in high gear. It's become priority number one, which it should have became. We're like a bunch of procrastinators around here. So it should have became priority number one in the past, but it just didn't. Now it is. Obviously a little too late, but now it is. So this time we will be ready. And one of the other features, and we have the ability to do it. For some reason, it hadn't worked for us in the past. There's something that we're missing. But when you access this special page, we should be able to have the pan-tilt camera interfaced with the software. So while you're in there, you can actually request control of the pan-tilt camera. We can actually set people with particular permissions to be able to control that camera, which is kind of nice. Because whenever the camera admin can't be around to monitor the camera or control the camera or work on the camera, you, the listener, you, the viewer, will be able to do it. I mean, these are our goals. We'll see how well it works out. We're going to take one step at a time. This weekend is going to be a lot of changes with the camera system, a lot more cameras added, a lot more views, and of course the night vision thing that I'm just like, I know, shut up Jack about your damn night vision, but I'm excited about it, can't help it. Anyway, so we'll have all that, so what you're seeing right now should be much, much better coming up soon, we hope. Anyway, all right, now that I'm done rambling about all of that, it's been a very strange broadcast night. It's been very strange. I don't know why. It's just been, I don't know how to explain it. It's just a weird, strange night. I'm sure most of you are saying, yes, it was, Jack. Yes, it was. I didn't even go to the email, so maybe I'll just do that real quick. What do we got, 5 minutes left here? And my producer's like, hey, I sent you over all this stuff, and you didn't even talk about it. I got rambling about cameras. Leave me alone. Yeah, all right, I'll post. We'll get all that stuff up on the website. How about that? Because there are a couple of videos that we got to put up there. And again, I want to remind everybody that the weather, the tornado, the eye of the storm, when we were caught in the massive storm, it is up on the website. It's in the Badlands video section. If you are having trouble logging in or viewing the movies that we put in there, just shoot me an email. Let me know what kind of computer you use, what your operating system is, and we'll see if we can't help you along with that, work out the technical issues, and get some patches and fixes up on the website. Because I know some people have actually updated their Flash, and it still doesn't work for them. I don't know. So we'll see if we can't figure that out. But on the website is the Eye of the Storm video. Go take a look at it. It is a lot of fun to watch. That's what everyone keeps saying. So go take a look at it. So see what we went through in back in May when we got evacuated here on a Friday night. Good times. Good times had by all. Let's put it that way. All right, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm done. Stick a fork in me. I just want to get to tomorrow. That's what I want to do. Tomorrow I'm looking forward to. All right, I'm out of here, folks. Keep looking up. Keep your eyes open. Keep your ears wide open. We'll see you tomorrow night, folks. 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time all the way till midnight. We'll see you then. I'm ending this night quickly. Ta-ta. California, here I come. Open up your world and
Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give me this my daily bread, and forgive me my trespasses, as I forgive those who owe us. Lead me not into temptation.